Hey guys, it's Justin. Welcome to another episode of Polar Opposites. So at the end of this episode, if you love what you hear, don't be afraid to subscribe and tell other people about this show too. In addition, make sure you're subscribed. And if you really love this show, don't be afraid to leave us a review as well. So you guys, today I'm joined with a guest this week. I'm joined with Kendall. And do you want to give yourself an introduction?
I just want to say hi to you guys. I'm ready to get started.
Yeah, so I'm excited to have Kendall on this episode. I think she'll bring like interesting perspective to the episode for our main topic. So before we get started, I just want to say 2 years ago, this kind of like marks the 2 year anniversary of a close friend that I had that passed away due to suicide. And I know with the platform I have, I just want to ensure that everybody like reaches out to those that they care about, because this was the first person that I've ever had close to me that's passed away like that. I had my grandfather, but I've never had anybody that was a friend like pass away early. So that was a really big shock for me. You know, I'm not used to that. So I just advise everybody, if you love somebody and you haven't talked to them in a while, don't be afraid to reach out, because, you know, our life on this earth is so limited and so short. So the littlest thing we can do to make somebody else happy, to make their day, to let them know that you're thinking about them, it goes a long way. The littlest things makes a difference in somebody's day. So I'll just say that before we get started. But we have quite the episode for you guys. Kendall, I have a few things that I need to get off my chest.
Go ahead.
So one of the things I need to get off my chest this week, as you guys know, we started a new segment called Off My Chest, where I get to rant about things that are really bothering me. So if there's stuff that y'all would like to rant about that's really getting on your nerves, you can send it to me at polaropposites.pod@gmail.com, and then we'll read them on the air. Did you hear about Tyler Perry?
Yes.
Yeah, Tyler Perry, if you guys haven't heard, opened up a whole movie studio. So the big news with him is that he's like the first black individual to have his own movie studio.
Yeah.
It's a big deal because we don't have that, you know, creative voice to control our own businesses and stuff like that. So I really applauded him, even though I'm not the biggest Tyler Perry fan.
Like, I grew up on Tyler Perry and watching the plays and stuff like mm-hmm. that. And my family, they're huge fans. They all had it on bootleg mm-hmm. and we would sit around and watch it. I was honestly these last 5 years, maybe, where when OWN came out, mm-hmm. I feel like there was still not that much support as far as casting and makeup, wigs. It was just the quality of the films were so poor that people really didn't like them.
Mm-hmm. And you mean Tyler Perry films in general?
Yes.
Yeah, I would agree.
And when he partnered with Oprah. Mm-hmm. But this was a game changer, and I feel like Tyler Perry stayed down these last couple years. We haven't really heard from him, mm-hmm. but then this happened. And then I found it interesting that the people that he chose to put on the Hall of Fame, mm-hmm. which we all know from Daddy's Little Girl, I can't remember her name, but he gave her a star, and then he had a replica of the White House. Mm-hmm. Like, it's completely replicating mm-hmm. the White House, and it's ran like the White House mm-hmm. and things like that. I found that really interesting.
I did
so,
too.
This is inspiring.
I thought it was inspiring too. Like, you might disagree with Tyler Perry when it comes to a number of things, but this one I was like on his side when it came to it. So there's kind of a little drama on Twitter. Always something on Twitter.
Always something. You know more than me, and
yes,
you don't have one.
I know. I don't even have a Twitter. Doesn't mean I can't see tweets. So there's this artist called No Name. You've heard of her, right?
Yes,
so,
I love No Name.
Yeah, she tweeted and she's like, I was very confused about this because, you know, conditioning. But black capitalism isn't progress or collective freedom. It's just capitalism. The goal isn't for a few blacks to make it into the upper class of society. The goal is economic stability and liberation for all. So I really did not like this. And she also retweeted something that was also problematic. She said, this is dystopic. Also sickening, considering how this land could have been used to serve people in a city facing an affordable housing crisis. I'm truly confused. What should we be celebrating here? And I do not like this because I think that people have a lot of issue with people being successful, especially if you're black, feeling some type of way and feeling as though rich black individuals have a purpose to alleviate communities that are impoverished, communities that need help. Why can't we be happy in this moment for Tyler to have his own studio and be able to, you know, make progress in the movie industry that hasn't been open with a lot of people of color?
And I agree, but I also agree with where her mind is going. So I feel like a lot of impactful people or people that feel like their purpose is to create a better life for others, mm-hmm. they're always going to want to think about inclusivity.
Right.
And they're always going to want to think about the bigger picture. A lot of times we get confused with the top tier, the people people that are wealthy mm-hmm. that are making decisions, mm-hmm. but everyone has their purpose and their way of impacting.
Right.
And so I don't think that we are progressing by knocking down someone else's way of opening doors. Mm-hmm. Tyler Perry is not Captain Save the World. He's trying to save a community that he is a part of,
right.
a community that he struggled to get into.
Mm-hmm.
So he's creating a door for them. That was his purpose.
Right.
That's what he felt that he could do.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, downing his progress is just
And I don't like
bullshit.
That because I'm sure Tyler Perry has done a lot for the black community in general. Like, just because he didn't do a housing project for people that are homeless doesn't mean he doesn't care about the homeless. This is what I hate about us thinking that rich people have an obligation to cure the world just because you have money.
In fact,
I think that they're not obligated to do anything. If you're rich and you have the means to help others, if you want to do that, that's your choice. You're not
mm-hmm.
obligated to do that. If I'm just telling you, if I had the money and resources, I would make a difference. Because that's a lot of money that I'm not going to spend in my lifetime, so why not help another person? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think this also has a lot to say with whenever black people see others as successful, we can't win together as a community. It's always like has
crabs
to be,
in a bucket
yeah.
mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Why can't we all win together? My parents actually own an African store, and my parents' friends would rather shop at the African store that's miles away versus the one that's, you know, blocks closer, which is ours. So they have this idea that by supporting us, they're making us rich, which is stupid. Why don't we invest and put money into our own communities, but yet it's easy for you to go spend that dollar or whatever at another establishment that's not part of the black community,
exactly.
but you struggle to give into your own. It just upsets
yeah.
me a lot. I don't know.
And it's a toxic circle and cycle that, you know, we're all trying to break.
Right.
Well, some of us want to
right.
break.
So I really needed to get that off my chest. If you're rich and you want to donate, go ahead and do it. But if you're rich and you don't want to, you don't have
enjoy
to.
Enjoy your money,
yeah,
sis.
Enjoy it. Enjoy it. All right, so let's move on to in the news. So in the news, we've all heard this Amber Geiger story, and I know we're all tired of hearing it. If you don't know, I'll just give you all the quick summation. Amber Geiger is a Dallas police officer, and a year ago, I believe, she was tired. She came back from work late, and as she was texting her, I guess, fling or her married husband, she was walking to her apartment, or what she thought was her apartment, opened the door, and sees somebody else there. The somebody else is a black man, and she shot him twice, and after she realized that she was in the wrong apartment and she made a mistake by shooting and killing somebody that she thought was in her apartment. So this case blew up, and now her sentencing finally happened, and they deliberated and decided to give her 10 years for mistakenly killing somebody. And people feel some type of way about it. My mom was saying that she thought it was an honest mistake. I don't know. I don't know if 10 years is justice. It's hard. I don't know what your feelings on the case is.
I think that what really was shocking, everyone was distracted by the number of years and by the judge, which made me feel a little weird that
mm-hmm.
the judge was able to go beyond herself and hug Amber
mm-hmm.
and console Amber. There's so many men and women that have been charged and
mm-hmm.
not gotten a damn thing.
How much comfort did they get? How many back rubs did they get?
Exactly. But uh-huh. on top of that, this plot twist
mm.
of witnesses
getting killed. Yeah,
I was gonna say going missing, but they
same
are
thing,
missing.
Right?
They're gone.
Yeah.
yeah
so another wrinkle that happened in this story, a few days after the sentencing happened, the neighbor of Botham Jean, who was the guy that got shot in his own apartment, his next door neighbor, I believe, who was a key witness in the trial, he was shot and killed. And people are wondering, is this just a random incident, or is this like a conspiracy? Is this somebody that's angry that decided to murder this dude just because he testified against a police officer? There's some people believe that the person that shot him could be a police officer. It could be, I don't know who could have done it, but it's kind of shady that somebody that's testifying in this case also ended up being killed. It's just too close to comfort, and I think there's something shady going on. Less than a week after the sentencing. So I think that it's more than just a random incident. It has to be some conspiracy, in my opinion.
And I think that our community we cannot catch a break. And I think that there's always layers on top of it and
mm-hmm.
speculation. But what does speculation lead to? Like, it's just going to be left unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to keep moving, and there's going to be something next going on.
Right.
It's a never-ending cycle of emotions and traumatizing visuals
mm-hmm.
and
It just sucks because there's even something else that I saw in the news, which was about a 21-year-old. He was called for jury duty and he overslept. Oh. Yeah, he overslept his jury duty and the judge decided to, I believe, give him 10 days in jail, like 120 hours of community service and other things for just missing jury duty, which I'm sure a lot of people miss.
Exactly. And I don't even know if I have had jury duty or...
I have. But I was in school, so I had, like, an excuse, and I had to write them and tell them, hey, I'm in school, I can't come for jury duty.
I don't think I've gotten it yet.
Oh, I have. Yeah. I'm surprised, too, because I'm like, shit. Yeah. Already? But, yeah, that's too harsh of a punishment. And a lot of people were saying that 21-year-old who happens to be black only got such a harsh punishment for missing jury duty because he is black.
Yep.
And I don't know, it just shows like the imbalance of justice in our country where certain people can get 10 years for murder while other people for simply missing jury duty get 10 days in jail. And I don't think that's fair. Okay, so I guess we're ready to move on to the main topic. So this week we are talking about parenting. And the reason why we're talking about this is Kendall and I actually had a discussion about our upbringing a little bit and about how people have ended up in life, like moving on from college and high school and how much our parenting has a lot to do with that. But I think for this conversation, it's going to be relevant for us to understand our parenting backgrounds before we give it our opinions on parenting and how we would parent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we're probably going to bring a different dynamic than some listeners because neither of us have children.
Right.
So we are just simply looking at parenting from the perspective of how we would like
perspective to, parenting.
Yeah, perspective parenting.
Based on how we got raised, basically.
Yes.
So I guess I'll start with me. So I grew up in a very, I guess, nuclear family. One mom, one dad. My parents are still together. My parents are married, three kids. And my parents immigrated from Nigeria, so they're also immigrants. So coming with that perspective, of course, is different than a lot of people because they have different values than people that are born here, especially when it comes to education. My dad preaches that from the rooftop every time because my dad came from literally nothing in Nigeria, was the oldest of, like, I think 8 siblings, came over here, worked really hard, studied through school, like, became a pharmacist, and was able to build a life for him here. So seeing how education got him so far, he really wanted to instill in us that that's the key to us being successful. So I think with that background, like, he really pushed going to school. Going to college was not optional. Like, it was like, you're going to college. It was never like, do you want to go to college? Like, what do you think about college? Like, okay, what's next after I graduated from high school? Like, that was never a question. So, like, growing up, my parents were hella strict. I would say that we were sheltered kids growing up. My parents really wanted to protect us from the world. And now that I'm older, I'm seeing what they protected me from. I think some of that is justified, but we'll talk more about that later in the episode. But yeah, so very strict. I would say very religious, pretty much. Yeah, so that's a little bit of background about my parents.
So for me, was completely different. So I have a blended
right.
family. And my parents, I've never seen them, or I wasn't alive with them being together.
Mm-hmm.
So they were legally separated when I was born and never knew what that looked like. And so I am the 4th out of 5 if we're looking at my dad's children.
Mm-hmm.
And for my mom, me and my 2 sisters, we pretty much grew up in the same household. So kind of quick background, my life is crazy. When I was thinking about this episode and what all I would share, I was just so torn on exactly what I would say because my life is just completely, like, consumed by the way that I was raised and what all I was exposed to. Having a stepmom, having a stepdad, having turmoil in my family, having, you know, jealousy and cheating and money issues, all of those things
right.
kind of showed me what I did not want. And
so, in your own family.
Yeah.
And the reason why I wanted Kendall for this episode, even though we might have some similarities, I guess in the way that we're raised, it was kind of starkly different, I would
yes,
say.
Completely.
I didn't say this before, but also in addition to, like, my immigrant background and where my parents came from and how they raised us, I think I grew up very, very privileged. And for the longest time, I didn't know it until everybody takes a look back on their life and looks at what they have and what others don't. I grew up very privileged. Like, I never had to worry about money. If I needed money and it pertained to school, my dad was able to give it to us. He wanted us to basically not grow up the way he grew up. You know, of course, growing up in Africa, not having all the resources. Coming here, we have all the privileges. We're in America, for one. Yeah. We live in a neighborhood that's, like, with well-to-do people. We went to the best schools. Like, I went to a great college. All of those privileges factored into, like, how I am now. And I think that it's important for us to, like, look at everything that we were given and our trajectory in life. I think that's important to look at, too. You know?
Yeah, and looking at that, I mean, my mom is a go-getter. Mm-hmm. She's from Alabama, a super small town. She was pretty much the only sibling that got out. That's a whole lot of layers in itself, because when I became a sociology major, like second day of freshman year, I was reading the book and I was like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. And my mom has what's called imposter syndrome, which is basically where she is a successful Black woman, has a lot of money, but she is still scared of the fact that she may become that poor small town girl that she grew up as, and she has no one in her family circle to relate to what she has going on in her life right now, so she feels misplaced in this, what we would say as a Black woman has made it. She, you know, will always have that small town girl mentality, even though she is very intelligent. But I learned this in my class and I was just like, wow, but my mom is so determined, and she was very strategic about making sure that we didn't want for anything and that we were taken care of and we were able to do extracurricular activities. Because my mom was a nurse. First, she was a travel nurse, and that's why we moved around a lot, as well as my dad being in the military for 11 years. So we moved around a lot. We went a lot of different places, but my mom decided when I was in fourth grade that it was time to settle down in Texas, where we had more family and more support. My whole time in Texas, I would say I was privileged. Like, I definitely was able to keep up with the Joneses. We both went to the same high school. Right. That was very wealthy.
Right, a lot of people from privilege.
Peers, yeah. And so for me, my parents being divorced and having, you know, separate families, they were two forms of income for me. So I always wanted to have the Uggs and the North Face and
whatever the
Nike.
Whatever the other girls were having.
Yes. And so I felt like I was privileged because I was able to basically combine those two incomes and get what I wanted. But I always knew that I didn't want what was in front of me as far as family relations. And but my mom is so determined. Like, she got her bachelor's from UTA, she got her master's, and we flew out to Maryland to see her walk. Aww. And all of those things showed me, like, I can do this, because I watched my mom, you know, just prosper. Yeah. You know, and so that's some, I know that's where I get all my determination
and
from.
I liked how you say you got your determination from your mom, because I think that as Black people or people in general, it takes seeing somebody close to you successful doing things that you can possibly do to realize that you also have the potential to do the same thing. My dad, with his doctorate, knowing he has a doctorate, he always told us, I don't want any of my kids to do what I'm doing. I want you to go above and beyond what I'm doing.
Exactly.
So knowing that, I was like, okay, it's possible. If I want to get a doctorate, I can do that. I can do anything, basically. That's what it teaches you. So yeah. I think it's so important for us to have people in our lives that are doing great things so you can also aspire to do those same things.
Yeah. Now, as a young professional, going to my mom, allowing her to help me with my benefits package, and, you know, everyone talks about how great it is to have a salary job, but honestly, it's serious business. You know, you are realizing that, oh my gosh, I'm a young adult. The next moves that I make are going to be so vital. And these are, you know, setting up your life insurance.
Your future,
and
yeah.
Everything. It's like, to have a mom that will be able to help me navigate those things, and knowing that when she was 22, she had two kids, it's just a different dynamic. And it's like, you were able to give me what you didn't have so that I could have a better setup at this age than you did.
And then provide for your own future. So everybody will be more better off than the generation that preceded it. But yeah, that's a little bit of background about both of us. Raising kids, I think, is the hardest thing now that I'm like at the age where I could possibly have kids. I always think about how it is my parents did it and how hard it is. One thing that I talked about in previous episodes is discipline. Because I think that as a parent, navigating how to discipline your kids is one of the hardest things to do. As you guys know, my parents were very strict on me. Like, we got spanked or beat, whatever you want to call it. Like, that's how it is for us. Yeah. And I would say that compared to what my parents got, we got it a whole lot better. When I was younger, my dad would make me, like, come downstairs and kneel down and put my hands up. And if my hands weren't perfectly straight, he would get the cane and, yeah, whip me. And I had to stand there for what felt like hours. And that was my punishment growing up sometimes. Sometimes it wasn't like that. I know that a child services person is listening and, like, reporting this, writing this.
No, we dealt with that as well. Mm-hmm. We used to line up and get whoop. Well, we didn't deal with that part, but we would get whoopings, and I would cry before I got the whooping, after I got the whooping, hours after. Like, I was the crybaby of the family, so I was the last one. I had to watch both my sisters get whooped knowing that I was next. Mm-hmm. And I also, so we had a problem upstairs with cleaning up. Mm. Like, we had clothes everywhere all the time. I'm very big on fashion. I have a hoarding problem with clothes. Mm-hmm. And so my mom, what she did was she put a padlock on every single one of our doors, and we had to sleep in the living room. And every day she would let us open the door for like an hour to clean up whatever we wanted to spend that hour doing in our rooms.
Wow.
And I would always like clean, take a little break, clean. Melody, my oldest, would clean. Stephanie, she would just lay in there and chill.
Stephanie's probably listening right
and
now. Like,
yeah, and my mom would be like, literally, y'all are not going to be able to get in y'all's rooms until they're clean. Mm-hmm. And we would always want to run out the house and not clean up. And so definitely the different punishments that my parents came up with, I know that they were just thinking on their feet because it was just random. But we did get spanked. We did spanked what? Whooped. I don't know why.
I call it spankings. I don't know.
We called it whoopings. Like, you're going to get a whooping. Mm-hmm. Like, whooping.
Right. It's hard. Yeah, I mentioned discipline because it's hard to raise a kid to tell them what's wrong and what's right and for them to get it without you having to repeat yourself. So for my parents, the way to discipline was with spankings, with physical punishment. A lot of people think that's abuse. Maybe if you didn't get abused or abused. What was that, a Freudian slip? Maybe if you didn't get whoopings or whatever, you're like, oh my God, whoopings? I couldn't imagine. That's abuse. That's horrible. But that's how it was for us. Yeah. And look at me now. Like, I'm a great person now. Yeah. And maybe it did work.
And some people need their ass beat. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is one thing that we've kind of strayed away from. And I feel like, yes, it is. Let me take that back. Mm-hmm. Let me take that back. Because sure. I just, a little bit of ignorance slipped out. Oh. And I shouldn't have said that. I feel like beating can have traumatic effects on some children. Sure. And that is where it's kind of a slippery slope, because a lot of abuse, there is
a cycle, right?
Yeah, and a lot of women who were abused as children usually end up in abusive relationships. And then there was a part, you know, that I wasn't going to talk about, but I'm going to talk about because it's important.
Okay.
When I was younger, I was in the care of a family member, and me and my sister, we got in trouble for eating too many fruit snacks.
Okay.
Because we ate too many, we got locked into the room for 2 weeks, I believe. And I have really bad memory with it because I've noticed I block things out that happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I was like young, like younger than 10, and we were in the room for 2 weeks, and the only reason why we couldn't play outside, we couldn't do anything, we could only come out and eat like twice a day. Mm-hmm. And this is while, you know, everyone was at work, and we were only under the care of that one person. Mm-hmm. And I remember we went out to eat lunch, and we watched our brother and sister bake cookies with the neighbor, and we couldn't because we were on punishment. But it was so hot in that room, and my sister was served fresh tomatoes, and she's allergic, so she got hives.
Oh, great.
And that was the only reason why we were able to come out of that room. But like, we didn't get to do anything, and our sister and brother got to do whatever they wanted
because they weren't in trouble.
And it was shown that there was a difference in the way we were treated and the way they were treated.
Those were the people that didn't get in trouble, and y'all were the ones who were, and just for eating fruit snacks. So because of that, how long did y'all stay in the room?
2 weeks.
Wow.
So, like, literally could not do anything. Wow. Like, we all day long in those rooms for 2 weeks. And it was the summer, so there was no going to school, all day long.
That's terrible. And I couldn't imagine. Like, people, like, punish their children in different ways. So, for me, I talked about getting spanked. Like, another punishment that some people might face is getting their phones taken away. That never happened for me.
Really?
Yeah, because communication is vital in our family. Like, if they took our phones away, I'd be like, fine.
I got mine taken. They did so many different punishments with those.
Like, I think whatever that's childish when people say, oh, I got my phone taken away. I was like, really? I got spanked. Like, come on. Like, some people get their phones
taken. Some people get a combination.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah, because I got my phone taken as well. Mm-hmm. That was it. But the thing was, which was so crazy, they never looked through my phone. And that is why I got away. Like, I snuck out so much. Mm-hmm.
No.
We didn't have an alarm until we went to college.
Wow.
So people, and I hope my mom never finds this, but my friends would use my house as the, like,
refuge.
Yes. So my mom would go to work at like 8 a.m. And so, like, I shouldn't say
I'll bleep that
it,
out. Don't worry.
Okay. My friends would come over, and if they wanted to go spend the night with, or not spend the night, but go on a date with a guy or whatever, mm-hmm. they would say, oh, I'm going to Kendall's. And then they would just get dropped off at my house because they knew my mom was going to go to work in the morning. We didn't have cars back then.
Right.
My mom never went upstairs. Mm-hmm. So they would just, so if they wanted to go do something and then get dropped off at my house would be that one. Because I had got it down to a T. You would turn the TV on, and they couldn't hear the door open. It was
a whole
thing.
See, y'all, Kendall was so much differently for me. I would never try that in my life. Like, my parents made sure that we were good kids.
I was always out and about.
And we were good children, Kendall's the thing. So whenever somebody did something bad, your spanking was to get, your punishment was to get beat. There we go, Kendall. Your punishment was to get beat. So because of how we were conditioned, knowing that my parents are African, came from this very strict environment, we were great kids, honestly, growing up. So the things that I would get punished for and spanked for, you'd be like, really? That's what it is? Whenever somebody would punish you maybe for sneaking out, my thing that I did would be leaving my room unclean or not washing the dishes.
Yeah.
Or my dad would work and come back at 10, and we weren't allowed to watch TV on weekdays. See, I'm sure you were. Yeah, we were not allowed to watch TV on weekdays. So we knew he came back at 10, and we would stay up till 10 because that was the latest until he came back. And then one time we didn't hear the garage, and we were still watching TV. And as soon as we heard the of the door open, everybody turned up the TV and started running and scrambling, like, oh my God, hurry, hurry. But my dad had already heard us. He called all of us downstairs. He said, Jesse, because that's what they call me. Since my first name is Justin and my middle name starts with the C, they call me JC. So my dad was like, Jesse, come down. And all of us came down, and we had to open the palms of our hands. And he got what's called the fufu stick and would beat us on the hands, on our palms of our hands, like maybe three times on each hand for all of us. And that was our punishment. He'd be like, go to bed. And we would all go to our rooms, and my brother would be crying.
And don't think that damaged you mentally?
Not really, because, of course, he told us not to do that, and we went against what he said, and we did it. But sometimes I think that I did get beat, and it wasn't justified. Sometimes out of frustration, my mom would just spank all of us. Like, everybody's annoying her, so everybody gets spanked. And one thing they couldn't stand...
That's not chuckling of funny. That's, like, nervous chuckle. Like, what?
Yeah, I mean, so that's what it was. And sometimes I felt like it wasn't justified. Out of all my three siblings, I'm the middle child, and I feel like I got it worse than everybody. I don't know. I was the quote-unquote problem child growing up. I wouldn't really get in trouble in school, but my teachers during parent-teacher conferences would be like, yeah, Justin, he likes to play. And then my dad would come back, you like to play. And then I would get a spank for that day. There's this one time that I got a spanking really bad. I think it was in sixth grade. Remember Fino?
Mm-mm.
A Fino is what they call failure is not an option.
Oh. You did not make that a...
I don't know why I didn't turn in my homework, but I forgot to turn in my homework.
Fino?
And yeah, for anybody that didn't turn in your homework in sixth grade, they had what was called Fino, and they would hold you after school for like 30 minutes or an hour as punishment for not completing your assignment. So since I rode the bus home that every day, my dad noticed that I wasn't home yet. So the teacher had called him and said, yeah, Justin, he'll be in Fino. And when I got home, my dad is like, what is Fino? And I said, failure is not an option.
You told him.
Yes, I mean, the teacher already told him what it is. She didn't just say, yes, he's in Fino and he won't be coming back till later today. So I was so scared because I was like nervous and shaking in front of my teacher, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to stay. And I think what happened is I was telling her how much I was scared to go home and face my dad, that she allowed me to go home in fast enough for me to make the bus and go home so my dad didn't have to come and pick me up. Because if my dad came and picked me up, that would be worse, because I ride the bus for a reason. So yeah, it was not the move. Oh, so that was one time I got spanked really bad. But I don't know. When it's not justified, I feel like sometimes it can lead to resentment. I won't say that I ever hated my dad, but I just didn't like, I felt like I was treated differently than my other siblings sometimes. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that to my siblings, I was probably the most spoiled because I learned how to just kind of play the part in the role that my parents wanted to play for them to be happy. Mm-hmm. And I think that the problem with me and the way that I was punished, there was, like I said, no rhyme or reason. Mm-hmm. And I think that my parents could be hypocritical.
Okay.
And so I feel like they were, first of all, I think that one of the most toxic things that I've told my mom that she said to us was, if I didn't have y'all, I could be doing X, Y, Z.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah.
That we didn't ask to be born, mm-hmm. you know. And then at a younger age, I found out that I was supposed to be aborted. Mm. And so that really messed with me, like, psychologically, because I would always wonder, why am I here? Like, why did she keep me? Mm-hmm. What if I wasn't here? Right. You know, things like that. Ugh. And not in a way, I've always been too selfish to try to hurt myself, and I don't know right. if that's a good thing or a bad thing, mm-hmm. but yeah, not in that way, but I would just always wonder, like, you know, what made my mom keep me mm-hmm. around,
right.
And so just knowing, and then I was the only child that my dad didn't show up to the, or couldn't make it to my birth,
oh.
and so I'd always tell my dad, like, I would tell him, how old am I? I'd be like 16. He'd be like 16. I'm like, no, I'm 17. You wouldn't know because you didn't come
oh,
to my...
Oh, God.
And I would throw it in his face.
And you'd use that against him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've learned that early on I manipulated the situation of my parents' divorce. And so I feel like that is where, like, I was kind of the spoiled one. Like, I would just kind of be the opportunist as far as the situation. But growing up, I've always been the social butterfly. I've always been kind of just... me. I don't really mm-hmm. know. But I feel like what made me resent them later on and is still a problem, a huge problem in the dynamic of me being at home right now mm-hmm. Is their hypocritical ways, because I see some complacency in some of the things that they do. And as a 22-year-old, I feel like I'm grown, and I feel like I am using this placeholder where I am mm-hmm. staying with them as a financially smart decision.
Right.
But
which
it's
it is.
Not
yeah.
it's not something that I have to do. So I like to be treated as an adult, and I know that I can feel myself reverting back to my old toxic ways by being in that house because of some of the things that they say to me. Mm. Like, they'll threaten the fact, and I feel like this is my stepdad's way of parenting, because he's like baby boomer generation, and baby boomer generation is more of you're the child, I'm the parent. And I understand that, and I understand myself as a child, but I'm not a child. You know, I am your child, you birthed me, but I'm a grown woman.
Right.
And what I'm saying is valid. And just because you don't want to hear the truth and it doesn't sound like what you want to hear, I'm saying it, and you should respect what I'm saying. Mm. And that's the problem that I feel like Black parents don't, they're not respected by their children because of their actions. You can't tell me
one
to
thing
do something
and
yeah.
do another.
Yeah.
The hypocrisy of it. And that's, I feel like a lot of people can relate to that statement.
Especially in college. Mm-hmm. College is when you see it. College is when you start to look at your parents as your equal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not, you don't act on that, of course, because I feel like that's being disrespectful. But my parents have an issue with the disrespect word. They don't understand what it means.
Oh, them being disrespectful?
Me being disrespectful.
Okay.
And sometimes I get frustrated and I'll be slick mouthed, and I've grown up being a slick mouth, like, last word type of person. That's gotten me in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Because I always have to have the last word. But at this point in time, it's like facts that I'm speaking, or even financial tips, or things that could really boost my family's situation, mm-hmm. financial
or
situation.
Or even just stuff that you can teach them that they don't
fundamental
know about.
Fundamental
yeah.
tools uh-huh. that they, you know, might not have seen. But the thing is, I've grown in those 4 years, and they've been in the same home, doing the same thing, mm-hmm. working the same jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, my mom's gotten a promotion, but
right.
they're kind of like, leave us alone. Mm-hmm. We're stuck in our ways.
They are stuck in our ways. And that's the same thing with my parents, because I think our parents grew up in similar generations, is that it's hard to change their minds about certain things.
Exactly.
But I think a lot of...
So frustrating.
It is frustrating. And I think that Nigerian kids especially struggle with this relationship with their parents, like being close to them and revealing stuff about yourself to your parents. And I think it's hard, especially with me. I can't speak for all Nigerians, but maybe y'all can relate. But just wanting to have a closer relationship with your parents, it's very much you are the child, I am the parent, and that's a relationship. Like, there is no your best friends, BFF with your mom or dad.
Yeah.
It's like a child-adult relationship, and that's that. If I do feel comfortable enough to tell them stuff, they'll use it against me later.
Yes.
Like, they'll be like, oh, that's why you're doing so-and-so, because of this thing that you told me. And I don't think that's fair. And I don't think that's, like, the best way to open up to your child and want that close dynamic.
Well, that's completely toxic.
Yeah.
And that's also something that I have to deal with. And I think that a lot of parents don't know. And that was, it's going to lead into a question I actually have for you.
Mm-hmm.
I think that a lot of our parents don't know or didn't know how to raise us, how to even get us equipped or prepared at all for what the world has offered us and what the world has handed us.
Okay.
And I feel like that's when, okay, my mom did take my phone, didn't take yours, but my mom didn't look through my phone.
Mm-hmm.
That could have saved me from a lot of things I saw or a lot of things I was engaged in. Like, they didn't know how to get a handle, or speaking for me, and the things that I saw. And I was not one of the quote-unquote bad kids growing up.
Right.
I was always the person who saw what was going on, saw a lot of things I shouldn't have saw, but I didn't engage really in those things.
Me neither.
So the fact that I was even at those places and saw those things could have been prevented. But what do you do when your mom is working 12-hour shifts as a nurse?
And it's called something. Whenever, like, you're always at home as a kid, but your parents work. I think it's called helicopter or something. I don't know.
I can't.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes, I know.
Yeah.
That's, I should know the name,
right,
but I can't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, definitely. That brings in a whole nother thing.
Sure.
How do you feel like you could prepare yourself with how you would raise your kids growing up in what we don't know is to come?
Right, because raising kids in the generation to come is going to be scary, because it's going to be a whole different monster in itself.
Yeah, so
for us, I think that we have to be more prepared to handle technology and how that's advancing, because for our parents, I mean, with us, we had flip phones for a while. You can't really do much on there. Then it turned into smartphones, and you can do a whole lot more on that. You're learning more. You're seeing stuff. If you don't know something, you don't go to your mom and dad and ask, you go to the internet.
Right.
So if you want to know something that somebody was saying in school, what's porn, what's this, what's that, do you go to your parents and ask that? No, you go to your smartphone. This is something that our kids are going to be doing. They already have access to technology. So I think the hard thing for us is going to be at what point to allow them access to that technology and stuff. And I don't know, because restrictions, are you going to like restrict them from seeing certain things or searching certain things? Like, how are you going to?
Exactly. That's really the question I had. And I'm also thinking, like, because I'm in high schools with my job, and I'm seeing these firsthand how these students are acting, and they have really bad interactive skills.
Oh, great.
So I feel like that is one of the huge, like, one of the biggest things that's scary to me, because we already have a big issue with communication
as it is,
as a society. And then on top of that, we're dealing with a generation of students that are very interactive with their technology and not with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that human interaction is really dialing back a lot.
Right. And
where
people
are not comfortable. A lot more people are having anxiety in social situations. And on top of that, I think that our parents had an issue with their emotional intelligence. So I feel when you have your child, your emotional intelligence is stumped. So you are no longer thinking about, you're not introspective at all.
Mm-hmm.
You're thinking about the child and the safety of the child and the growth of the child and how you're going to pay for this.
Yeah.
And so that stumps your emotional growth. And I've seen that in my parents. A lot of things they completely have blocked, or they don't want to deal with, or they've never dealt with, and they don't want to bring it up, you know, 20, 30 years later.
Right.
Because they haven't thought about that since they had their first child.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think
they have a lot of, like, growing and learning about themselves to do. I completely agree with that.
You know, walking around 22, on Instagram, seeing all these people popping out babies, I'm just like, I couldn't imagine at this point in my life preparing a child for what I'm not even prepared for as far as the future.
Ooh, Kendall, we have so many subtopics we could possibly talk about, but I think that what you mentioned with the generation that came before us, they have a dependency on technology, so that's something that we're gonna have to like really think about. Are you gonna like censor your kids from seeing certain things? Because I told you my parents were always at work all the time, so of course I agree with you when you say that you were seeing things that you shouldn't have seen. A child in fourth grade should not be watching Flavor of Love and I Love New York, and I was watching that
thing. But they are, and we were. They are watching reruns. Uh-huh. They're watching memes and stuff that is attached to...
But they don't even know where it came from. It's so funny. Like, that's why I say I'm not Gen Z.
I do agree with the censoring. I do agree
I will. I'll do it.
But that brings me to... do you watch Black Mirror?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I love that show.
I do too. It's scary.
I haven't watched it in, like, the last season I don't think I caught. Or the last couple episodes they released.
The new season?
But... Have you seen the one where she has, like, a child and she has, like, a iPad that tracks her child and she can see the eyes of the child and what the child is doing?
No. Oh, do you think that's what it's going to be whenever we start raising kids?
It was crazy because, like, she basically aborted her child's baby because it censored on the iPad that she was pregnant.
Oh, no.
Yes. And then at the end, it turned out
Sorry, spoiler alert, you guys, for you guys that are listening. Yeah, I'll let you know beforehand.
It turns out at the end... Do you want me to tell you?
I'll watch it anyway, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay, the child basically kills the mom because she finds out that she had the iPad, and her mom even saw her lose her virginity through the eyes of her daughter.
And why was she saying anything whenever she saw all these things?
She wasn't telling the daughter. The daughter didn't know that her mom had access to seeing everything.
See, this is scary.
Saw.
Are you going to do that as a
chip
parent?
That they put in her child when she was born. I feel like that's extensive.
Mm-hmm. You need to give your child space. Like, yes, there's certain things that you should know, and yes, there's certain things you should remove from having access to. But I think that it's too far for me to be reading my child's text messages because some parents do that.
Yeah. What about? So yeah, my aunt does that, but my coworker was telling me how. All her children, four of them, have iPhones, and she has all of their locations. And she says if they turn it off at all, then she's cutting off their line. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. She was just telling me this last week.
I don't know. I feel like...
Do you want your child's location?
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, yes. I think it's about trust. If you believe that your child is not where they're supposed to be...
At what age would you trust?
When they start driving. When they start driving, then they're telling you, I'm somewhere. You need to know where they are. My parents, some people put a tracker on their kid's car. I think that's too far.
That's excessive.
Some people put a tracker in their kid's phone. That's too much, I think. You need to have a balance between privacy and allowing your kid to be a kid. And that's another thing with freedom and allowing your kids freedom. Like, I told you I was very sheltered growing up, so I didn't go to a lot of parties and stuff in high school. It was so bad. I remember when I went to my first high school party, I didn't know what to expect. I brought a gift. I brought a gift, and I don't even remember at this point. Once I saw what kind of party it is, I went back to the car, dropped that shit off, and I was like, here. I'm so embarrassed.
I was hanging with my sister, who is 2 years older, and one is 5 years older and one is 2 years older. So I saw a lot, and I was out and about. So when I got to college, it wasn't that big of a deal for me to go to a party, and it was actually whack.
Oh, yeah. So, it's not even all that, honestly. I really don't. Things about college I don't miss.
Speaking of freedom, so... How do you feel about the sex talk and how that freedom of... No, we never...
Oh, with my kids? If I have kids. With the sex talk with me, we never got the sex talk. Like, African parents do not talk about sex at all. Like,
there's no type of sexual education.
No, there's not. There's not. There's no condoms. There's no this. There's no that. There's no sex talk at all. And I think they just don't want us to be having sex. So if you just don't talk about it, then they won't do it, is, I think, their rationale.
Yeah, and for the Black community, I don't really know. Can't speak for everyone, of course. But for me, like... I feel like it was just kind of like, don't do it. And it was kind of a thing where my mom was like basically wanting all of us to surpass 16 of not getting like pregnant.
Wow.
And I feel like there is, because like I think that my granny was 15 when she got pregnant with my mom. So we all surpassed the 16 age. We all surpassed 20. We all surpassed, I think, when did my sister get pregnant? 23. So we've gotten pretty far, but it's still, what does that mean? What kind of education is that to tell your children, oh, don't have sex, don't get pregnant, you know, by 16.
But think about it. I feel like,
you know, what, you know, my mom's mom was 15. Where's that education?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, some people get it in school. I think that we learned by egg and sperm and stuff, they're like, okay, he must know about sex.
But that, what, no, for a female, you need to know about what this looks like, how to give yourself a breast cancer tumor examination in your breast, how to know what a yeast infection is, how to know what bacterial vaginosis is, to know that boys don't need to be putting their dirty fingers in your private parts, you know, things like that.
Yeah, it's to protect them. Sometimes in order to protect, you think that withholding information is protecting them, but sometimes giving them information is protecting them, because once you know the truth, it'll scare you from ever wanting to do the stuff that you're quote unquote not supposed to do.
Yeah.
Do you agree with that?
And so, yeah, and I feel like a lot of people that I've talked to, both my parents' age and like my age, have been very taken advantage of, most definitely, when it comes to sex. And a lot of the words in the Black community have been fast, or you know, she looks fast, or I know that a lot of people in my family just, and it's not even something that I am upset about at this point, because they don't know better, but they will over-sexualize kids. And if a boy and a girl is running around and we do cookouts and they sit out on the yard and gossip or would listen to music, and if they see us even as young as five, a girl and a boy together, oh, they're boyfriend and girlfriend, like, they'll over sexualize and it's because
something
that's
so
the
innocent
culture.
Yeah, yes. And even with toxic masculinity in barbershops, if there's a little boy that's getting his hair cut and he has a shirt on that says my girlfriend or something like that, they start, oh, you got a girlfriend or you whatever, this boy doesn't know anything about that.
Exactly.
And they're already ingraining these people.
And a lot of people that I've talked to, men that I've talked to, they have been molested and touched and not know what it means or what it is. And even being exposed to sexual things that early allows them to be predators on women because they don't want to feel like they don't have that control because it was taken
from
them.
So they're going
to
do the same thing
to somebody else. So the conversation in parenting, in parenting my future children, that's already going to be established and talked about. Me and my husband will be talking to our kids about what is a no-no and what they can, you know, come and talk to us about, because a lot of people have told me and have always discussed in things that I've researched, kids usually just don't think that their parents will believe them or care about what they say. And that all comes with how parents react to their kids and respond to their kids' emotions.
Right. And I think part of that comes with fear and respect, that balance of, you know, as a parent, people feel that you shouldn't fear your parents, basically. Like, for me, I feared my parents. Not that I was scared that, oh my God, I'm going to get beat or whatever. It's like, I have, like, so much respect for them and, like, fear. You know how people say God-fearing? Like, I was parents-fearing, I guess.
I definitely don't agree with that.
Really?
I think that I feared what they could take from me, but not necessarily them. And I think that comes from early on my sister realizing some of the, like, things, the punishments that didn't make sense, or the rationale that my parents would try to muster up that never really added up. My sister would, like, get mad and go on rants and tell me, like, she was one of those people, like, they don't want us to succeed. They don't want to, you know, like, she was like that person that was the radical one. And she would always help us look in a different perspective. And I feel like I lost respect for my parents pretty early. So,
oh, gosh.
Yeah, it's fucked up, but it's the truth. I definitely want my kids to respect me, though. Like, I want them to be able to talk to me. And I totally am okay with them not telling me their personal business. I feel like a lot of parents, again, going back to when your parents decided to have you, what age, it decides, like, how they deal with you and your personal business.
Right.
Some people who never got to have those college days or never got to have those boyfriends that they only had one all their life or whatever, they like to get in your business and live through you. I've heard that a lot through some of my friends. And that's ridiculous to me.
Like, your parents, like, getting in your business and
stuff?
Yeah,
and wanting to, like, be a part of that life that you're living at the age of early 20s, even 20s in general, like, those are meant for you to figure out who you are. And I don't really think that
a parent should, like, put their nose in that. I don't know. Like, with relationships and stuff, I think, our parents never talked about that either.
I'm never going to the club with my mom. I'm just not.
There should be, like, a balance. Like, I think that you really shouldn't be, like, BFF with your parents. I think that's weird. Your parents are your parents, and that's that. But I want to, like, talk about school a little bit.
Definitely.
I talked about, like, education being, like, a big deal in my family, and how, like, we were always supposed to go to college. Was it like that with you? Like, were you supposed to go to college? Like, was college, like, always seen as something that you were gonna do regardless of?
Yeah, so neither of my parents were traditional college students. So my dad went to the Army straight out of high school, and then my mom went to the Air Force. Mm-hmm. So they met up, and my mom actually met my dad at the Piggly Wiggly, where she was working, which is a grocery store in Alabama. I don't know if they have any
open. I've never heard
still.
Of it. Yeah.
Yeah, but so basically he was stationed in Alabama, and that's where my mom lived. And so they met, and the rest is history. So they didn't get their traditional college degree, but they did both continue their education afterwards. Mm-hmm. So as far as college, I had different examples. Like my aunt, she went to UT Austin. Mm-hmm. She's just one of those, like, super fans of UT, and oh my god, mm-hmm. UT alumni, whatever. And then she also pledged there, and so it was always, I've wanted to be a Delta since I was like 8. Mm-hmm. And so of course, to be a Delta you have to be in college. But I will be completely honest, my life view of myself stopped at early 20s.
Really?
So, like, I would always just imagine myself in college, but I never saw myself as, like, a full-blown professional.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I just knew that I was always going to go to college, like, from forever. Like, even to this day, we have a game room upstairs, but growing up, we were never allowed to call it a game room. My dad would always say, it's a library. So whenever we would mention that room, we'd be like, yeah, she left her book in the library. And then kids would be like, you have a library in your house? And I'd be like, mm-hmm.
That is so, and it's funny how, like, parents will groom children.
Yeah, they're grooming us.
Scholars.
Yeah. And they wanted, my dad for the longest time, his dream is that all three of his kids would become medical doctors. Like, that was, he would tell us that every single day.
Yeah, one of my guys I used to date, his parents are very adamant about him becoming a doctor.
Is he African?
He's Cameroonian.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it is. Like, the fact that you're grooming your kids to be a doctor shows that, like, going to college is not, like, an option. Like, you must go to college in order to even be a doctor.
That's usually the first step
to several. It's a good thing, though, but I will say that we weren't really allowed to explore other careers. So it's always science, 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 doctor, doctor, doctor. So we weren't really given room to explore. So I think that with future generations, it'd be important for me to, like, expose my kids to, like, other different careers. Because as long as you're good at something, you'll always make money.
Yeah.
Coming from Africa, they thought that, you know, the way to success is through education and through becoming something in the medical field, like doctor or whatever. So with us, they're always like, doctor, doctor, doctor. But there's more to life than just a doctor. There's so many other careers that can make you rich. And I guess just knowing the way that that field works, and how if you work hard, you can be a doctor and make money, is their motivating factor into why they wanted us to do medicine.
Yeah, I feel like we were encouraged to do what we like to do.
Mm-hmm.
I did everything from dance. I remember I played basketball when I lived in Germany, and I was like, every time we would score, I would be dancing on the court.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody, I think it was my dad, was like, you look like you're the cheerleader, you know, when I was on the court. And so the next year I cheered.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like it was always an option to just do what you wanted to do. And I think that in the future, it's really going to be a lot of open doors to give my future children, if I, you know, get that opportunity, to tell them you really can do whatever you want to do, because there's going to be so many other doors open, especially the doors that I've opened for not only people of color, but marginalized communities like trans and women, and, you know.
Yeah, the new generation is going to be so different.
They're going to be able to do whatever the fuck they want.
It's going to be a much different environment than when we were raised.
Okay. So thinking back on everyone watching Disney Channel and, like, basically growing up on certain characters and seeing how they kind of manifested their lives as young adults, I feel like a lot of parenting has to do with that. And I think that a lot of those parents definitely weren't equipped for what was going to come into play as far as phones and nudes and being exposed, quote unquote.
Right.
How do you think that you would have dealt with that? Or how do you think you will deal with your kid if they want to be a star or they want to be in that industry?
I think that sometimes when we see all these kids being stars, like all these child stars, it's because either they come from a poor background and these parents are using their kid as a vehicle to make money. So it's kind of like, in a way, pimping their kid. But in a way,
that's what people say the NFL is.
I mean, we can talk about that too. But I think sometimes it can be seen as pimping your kid. Your kid might have talent, or your kid might not even want to be a child star, but you're pushing it because they're cute and they have the opportunities to possibly be successful. But I think it's scary because we see how a lot of, you know, stars end up in life. I think it's difficult. I would monitor all their social media. They wouldn't have access to any of that because of how crazy people are on the internet. Like, you know, with kid Instagrams and all these crazy people leaving nasty comments.
Yeah, like, I'm not... but I think that, like, the model or the ideal view of it right now would be Yara Shahidi. Mm-hmm. I think that her family uses their platform for education and educating minority communities, and I also feel like she's authentically her. And
same with Zendaya.
Yeah, I was going to say Zendaya.
The thing I noticed with them is that they're very close to their family, and they're not growing up too fast. You saw Zendaya was still on Disney Channel for a while, and people are like, why is she still on Disney? She made a statement saying that she doesn't want to grow up too fast, and she wants to remember being at that age and being young, and she just wants to grow up the way she's supposed to grow up.
Yeah, even why can't I think of their names? The twins that are Grown-ish.
Chloe and Halle?
Yes, yeah. Chloe and Halle, yes. Why can't... I'm just, like, brain dead today.
It's okay.
But, yeah, like, how they share their social media. Mm-hmm. I think that's very interesting.
I would not want to share with
I've always wondered if that was a parental thing or if that was their decision.
I think because they are a group, that's their shared Instagram account. But they could easily make their own and have their own.
Could they?
Yeah. Do you think that would cause drama if one person has more followers than
the
other?
I don't know. So I'm wondering why they decided to put that together. But I feel like it's interesting how Black families are choosing to navigate their platforms and how they are supporting each other, and how you can see... even Martin.
Not Mersai, it's... What is her name?
I don't know. Honestly, we're butchering
I know.
These names.
It's not
But
Mersai.
Y'all know the one...
The dark-skinned little girl from Blackish.
She also just produced her first movie.
Called Little.
Little, and that was a good movie. And Issa Rae was in it, as well as Regina George, or Regina King. And
she said Regina George.
Don't play me. I am really messing up the names today, but...
Mersai, yeah.
Yeah, she definitely is making a statement, being so young and producing a film. So I think that the Black community is growing in the industry, but as a parent, I probably wouldn't know how to grasp hold of that. And even, like, you could even talk about Megan Thee Stallion, how both of her parents are dead. So her actions are pretty much her team and her.
Yeah,
as
and whatever
adult.
Family members are close to her.
Yeah.
Because we don't see if she has siblings or anything like that. But yeah, it's definitely dangerous if you want to have a child star in this generation with all this technology. Because back in the day, there was no Instagram, there was no Twitter for your kid to have an account on. You were just famous and people would see you around, but you didn't have a public platform on social media to showcase yourself. So I don't know how I would feel about that. If it's their dream and they have the talent, then I'll support it. But if not, I don't think that's something that I actually do.
You're not going to be one of those pushy parents.
No.
That I mean, there's different types of pushy. You could talk about how you yourself were pushed into being a scholar. So it really just depends on what you decide for your kids. But I think it's interesting because decisions you make change the trajectory of their whole life and molding their life. Even down to the smallest thing as far as dreading your child's hair at a young age.
And the stigmatization that brings.
Yes.
The stereotypes.
I said dreading and I meant locking, because dreading is actually what they use to call locks to... basically, I found this out on Twitter, y'all. You know, Twitter facts.
Oh, God.
They were talking about how it links to the word dreadful, and how they try to link everything that is Black made or happening through the black community as bad. Mm-hmm. And so they started calling them dreads. Mm-hmm. But they're really locks, y'all. So let me excuse myself and educate you all with that. But even something as small as that, I think about that because I'm thinking about locking my hair. Mm-hmm. What if my mom would have done that without my permission at mm-hmm. 5?
Yeah. See, even because hair is, again, always so politicized. Like, how you style your hair, like, says a lot. And people perceive a lot based on what your hair looks like. If you decide to relax your daughter's hair, people are going to be like, oh, her hair is nice, versus the hair that comes out of her head naturally. So it's like, how do you navigate that? Are you just going to let it be natural and let her decide how she wants to do her hair when she's of age?
Yeah, but overall, I think, you know, my little mini-me's are going to be brilliant. And I have two little mini-me's right now who are my nieces, mm-hmm. Marin and Aaron. Aww. Marin is 3 and Aaron is 1.
Shout
and they are
them.
Bundles of joy and they are so smart.
Yeah.
And I swear that they are just going to be the next best thing. And I feel like a lot of kids that are in this generation are going to have so much at their fingertips, and I'm just excited to see like what they have
to
offer.
We're laying the foundation for the future, so we got to keep on working hard so people can have it easier than us. But to wrap things up, I guess parenting is hard. You wanted one more thing?
No. I didn't want it to end. It's a great conversation.
This is a great conversation, but bottom line, parenting is hard, and I really applaud my parents because I turned out great. And it's hard because coming from a different country with a different standard, you have to apply American standards and work with that in order to produce, you know, a child and a successful one at that. So it's not the easiest thing. And I applaud every parent out there that's balancing how to raise your kid, because every little thing that you show your kid, they're going to be absorbing everything because kids are sponges. And you just got to make sure that, you know, you're doing the best to provide for your kid.
So I think despite the way that I was raised and the crazy family dynamic that I had, I have grown into a great woman. And I think that it goes beyond parenting. A lot of people say that raising a child takes a village. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe that. And it's parenting goes further. It goes into your family dynamic, but it also goes into your friend group and who you surround yourself with. And so regardless of how I decide to actually go about raising my children when it becomes time, I hope that I have the resources and the support system to create the life that will make my children have the best and
the best of everything.
Be the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, and be able to make decisions that will make them decent human beings.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard, but they did it, and everybody's going to continue. So I hope you guys like this discussion about parenting. It's kind of all over the place, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
so if you guys enjoyed the podcast, be sure to subscribe. Be sure to leave a rating if you wish. This was fun, Kendall.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. And because you guys heard all of my craziness, I kind of feel like, you know, I made some friends today.
Friends.
I feel like somebody might have connected.
Yeah, somebody will connect to it. Like, this reaches a lot of people.
My crazy family, yeah.
But yeah, I hope you
guys.
Thank
you so much for having me.
No problem, Kendall. Like, you were a great guest. I hope you guys have a good rest of your week. And as always, if you want to follow us, you can follow us at Polar Opposites Pod on Instagram. And if you want to leave us a letter that we can read on air, you can always email us at polaropposites.pod@gmail.com. So with that being said, I will catch you guys on the next one.
Motorcycles, blackjack, classic vinyl.